So we give God thanks for yet another opportunity to share briefly with you just some key highlights on the subject of fear and anxiety, but also in a very, very brief way, look at God's advice or admonition to managing, you know, anxiety from a day-to-day perspective. If it's okay, we can never pray enough. So if I can ask people to just bow your heads with me and we just say a very short prayer. Father, we just want to thank you so much for who you are in our lives and the fact that you provide everything we need so we can manage from day to day. Today, as we take time to reflect on this subject, we pray that if there is anyone who might be struggling with this very issue of anxiety and fear that we're talking about, Lord, that you will bless them and help to take away their fears, but more so in a case where additional support may be needed, I pray that you help that individual to take the necessary steps to recovery. Be with us. May your presence stay with us, and that may you bless us throughout this present. Amen. So fear and anxiety. First of all, I like to tackle it from looking at it from the psychological perspective, and then also look at some brief sort of guidance from what Jesus had said many thousands of years ago that is still very applicable to us even today. Anxiety, I mean, you would have heard, as you said, this terminology nowadays being mentioned so many times. And when you do consider the fact that we're living in times where the subject of any mental health, you know, condition or mental health in general has become such a hot potato. You know, rewind 10, 15 years ago, probably not a subject that was very common. But today we find that it's a very common condition. As a matter of fact, experts do refer to it as one of the as a common cold. And when we think about the common cold, something that many of us probably would experience in, you know, in different times during the year. And so the reason for referring to anxiety as a common cold in our day is the fact that many people do experience anxiety, some of whom this is actually a chronic problem that you live with, that to a degree has severely become a debilitated problem, stopping you from being able to function and live the life that God would want for you. So if I start with just a very quick, broadly, that is a reaction to an expected threat or danger, whether this is real or this is imaginary. It's what some people may call a normal human response to a severely stressful situation. But for some people, it may serve as a warning, an important warning to an impending danger or threat. And so let me take you back to perhaps the primitive age or the Stone Age or whatever you want to call it, where people used to live in perhaps, you know, in the wild and in the caves. And I just want you to imagine somebody coming out of a cave and the first thing you saw in front of you is a lion. In those instances, people would usually respond to that perceived threat or the threat in front of them in maybe one of three ways. So either the person might decide that the threat in front of them is too huge and therefore they can't cope. So what they would typically do is they would avoid, or that they would run back into the cave to keep safe. Or the person might decide that, okay, this is a massive threat, but you know what, maybe I can face this and I can fight it and I can overcome it. And so let me grab my primitive tools and face this threat and try and conquer it. So the person may either run, avoid, or face it, exposure. Or the other side, as some people will look at, is where people will freeze and simple which way to go. As human beings, though, when it comes to fear and anxiety, the most common option we tend to take is avoidance, is the running away option. Because when we choose to run from the perceived threat, whether again it's real or imaginary, when we choose to run, what that simply does is, because we're not facing that fear or that threat, it means that we feel okay in the short term. But in the long term, what we are telling ourselves, so the message that we reinforce in our brains, is that this threat in front of me is too huge. In other words, we overestimate the threat, but it's too huge for me to be able to cope. So we tend to overestimate what we see as the perceived threat, whilst at the same time, we underestimate our abilities to be able to cope, which is the reason why whenever we face a fear, the easier option that tend to be our default way of coping is to avoid, is to run away from it. But as long as we keep running, we keep reinforcing that message, the threat is too big, I can never cope. So I just want you to keep that at the back of your mind as we go through this. Now, statistically, we are told that 1 in 4 people, at the moment, that's what the stats say, 1 in 4 people would experience an anxiety disorder in a given year. I like to think that actually the figure could be much higher. In fact, from what we're experiencing in terms of in surgeries and hospitals and clinics where we see people with anxiety disorders. But more so, we know that these numbers are usually based on people that, you know, we have researched or people that have been diagnosed. Yet we know there are many others who struggle with these conditions but have not taken the steps to want to seek help. So give or take what the reality is on the ground, I would argue that actually the numbers are much higher than the 1 in 4 in any year. So, you know, as a friend of mine would say, you sit in a church pew with, you know, up to 6, you know, on the line, and if you check the first 3 and they all seem to be okay, that perhaps you need to check you being the 4th person, whether or not you might be the person that may be struggling with an anxiety disorder. But by the way, that obviously is not the most simplest ways to look at the problem. But the reality is, many of us would experience an anxiety disorder in any given year. Some of this can be so severe that it could truly affect the way we function from day to day. So alongside anxiety, when we talk about some of the common mental health disorders, of course, we talk about depression, anger, stress. But of course, when we look at anxiety, this then broadened out to so many different disorders. In fact, within the field of psychiatry, anxiety disorders tend to be the most prevalent in so many different ways. So, how do we come when we come to a situation that we may perceive as a threat or danger to our lives? Primarily, they're required to be able to detect what we may perceive as a threat. And to a degree, this function of the brain actually has to work, you know, in order to help protect us from some of the real dangers that we may come across. Because if this passes, then you and I can just walk in front of a bus without blinking an eye. But we face threats that are real so that our lives can be preserved. What is different about an anxiety disorder is when our amygdala, the part of the brain that is primarily functioning functions to detect the role. Sounds of a perceived threat, and yet the cortex part of the brain that is supposed to assess the threat and determine whether this is real or not is unable to do its role properly. So that being the case, the amygdala will continue to sound the threat, you know, the alarm of perceived threat, but then usually it's up to the cortex part of the brain to be able to assess the threat and decide this is real or this is imaginary. But in the middle, in between the alarm going off that here is danger and the cortex assessing that danger and deciding that this is actually not a real threat as you think, in between the two processes, our body will respond to that perceived threat with an adrenaline response into our bloodstream. And so if you remember what I said at the beginning of a man, you know, coming out of a cave and meeting, you know, or seeing a lion, what happens in between the functions of these two elements of the brain is that the body responds with adrenaline into your bloodstream, and that basically prepares you either for fight or for flight. So you might have come across the terminology is fight or flight response. Basically, what your body is doing is that it places you physically in the position where if you choose to run, you are actually able to run and avoid the threat in order to keep safe. By the same token, if you choose to face the threat, you know, and sometimes many of us will say, you know, I was going through this, but and I know that I was just riding on adrenaline. It gives you that pump, that urge to want to. So what you would find is that people would either tend to choose one of those two options. Here is a threat I'm going to face and overcome it, or the threat is too big, I can't cope, so it's better for me to run. Or in cases where this may be too overwhelming, some people simply freeze and don't know what to do. And it's for this reason that you will discover that when people go through anxious moments, when we face anxiety or fear, there is an overwhelming amount of physical symptoms that we tend to experience. And sometimes we can even go as far as misconstruing some of these symptoms to be physical or medical conditions that we are experiencing. But a lot of the time, this may just simply be some anxiety situations that we're going through. Okay, so when we talk about anxiety disorders, there are obviously many anxiety disorders that we experience. This will usually be caused by different scenarios or different situations as well. For the sake of time, obviously, there is no way under the sun that I can cover all the various anxiety disorders that we have. So what I'll do is I'll just kind of run through some of the lists of them. And if anybody wants, you can contact me afterwards, or some of it you can actually, I can send you self-help materials that you can look at on some of those specifics. So in general, some of the anxiety disorders that we have or that people tend to experience include things like social anxiety, where, as a matter of fact, you know, taking you back to the primitive age and the lion and the caveman scenario, nowadays the things that we face that causes us anxiety are not stepping out of your house and seeing a lion. A lot of the disorders we experience nowadays would include things like social situation. And so people develop social anxiety disorder. And this is where some people can be so afraid of being in a social context. Usually the underlying fear tend to be fear of perhaps making a fool of themselves, fear of how they would be perceived by others, whether or not people perceive them as inept, as incapable, not good enough. And so that if you put them in slight, then they, and therefore lose people in their lives. And for that reason, people who struggle with social anxiety disorder, them alive, they simply would not want to put themselves in that position because it's so frightening. Their amygdala tells them they are approaching a frightening situation and they will do anything they can. Have generalized anxiety disorder, the key feature tend to be those who worry a lot. There are some people I've come across who pride themselves into say, oh, I'm a worrier. I'm a natural worrier. You know, I worry about everything. And people with GA, something, you know, to replace one worry. So they might worry about finances. The moment they feel that the problem in finances is solved and they don't actually need to worry about that, they have to find something else to worry about. And the reason why people who their beliefs about worry is that worry offers them something positive. So in other words, they tend to believe that if I worry a lot, worry prepares me. It puts me on an alert. So it places me in a situation where if something bad is going to happen, because I'm already worrying beforehand, it means that when the event happens, it doesn't have such a massive impact on me. That is a misconception, is a delusion. It's not a fact. Because regardless of how much worry you do beforehand, if an event happens, believe me, you will still feel the impact. And so the question is, when you do so much worry beforehand and the event still happens anyway, what is the benefit to you? For having done as much work. And then we have scared of being in open places. And sometimes alongside that is also being in places where there may be crowds or other people, you know, loads of people around, where they tend to feel that, you know, there isn't usually an easy way of escape. And again, to have those people in these open places, like maybe markets or big functions where they feel they can't escape very easily, for these individuals, it can also create a deep sense of anxiety and fear for them. Then, of course, we have panic disorder or panic attacks that some people may experience. And usually, panic attacks or panic disorders, this tend to be a misinterpretation of basic anxiety symptoms where people experience. And I'll come to some of the anxiety symptoms in a minute. First, we have post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, as it's usually known as. PTSD is simply where people are usually, they have experienced a very traumatic event in their own lives, or they have witnessed a very traumatic event, usually characterized by a near-death experience. So some examples of PTSD, usually a beginning of PTSD would be people who have been on the war front, you know, like the army or the police in terms of what they experience from day to day, or even in some cases, people like social workers who go into people's homes who may face some real threats. PTSD for some people may also be as a result of childhood abuse, for example. When I say childhood abuse, I'm not just looking at abuse across. So, take some of us who come from cultures where growing up, you know, the cane or licking, as you know, some cultures may know it, was quite a normal thing. There are cases though where this so-called discipline or licking or using the rod or the cane were nothing short of pure abuse. And there were children who did experience those situations where going through them, they would have felt that their lives, their very lives were at stake, or their lives were in danger. You know, these events might have happened in childhood, but there are people who today will be living the symptoms of those traumatic experiences they had when they were children. And then, of course, there is sexual abuse, rape, in their own homes. And again, as I said, you know, in homes where there may be severe domestic violence, children who may witness some of these things and the partners who actually experience them could also, you know, end up living with PTSD symptoms. Then again, very briefly, we also have health anxiety. So this is where people constantly have severe anxiety and fear about their health. Some of the typical symptoms you may discover with people with health anxiety is that whenever they have a headache, they may straight away start thinking they may be having a tumor, you know, in their heads. Or that if they have a tummy ache, they straight away begin to think it's a cancer. If they have something to do with their tooth, they begin to wonder. So there is always a misinterpretation of whatever pain or something they might notice quite unusual within their bodies to be something a lot more sinister. So they always would see the worst case scenario. If they have a headache, it won't simply be, I've got a headache. It has to be something much more severe. Another thing that people with health anxiety will tend to do quite typically is that there is extensive reading of materials on Google on almost every symptom they think they have, or that they will do a lot of body scanning all the time to check and make sure that there is nothing untoward, you know, happening within their bodies. Then we have specific phobia or phobias. Now, people who have extreme fear of specific things. For some, this may be snakes. You know, if you come from when you see a snake, this is not a time to be playing pets with a snake. And so some people may have extreme phobia of snakes, even though they might come to the UK where people have snakes as pets, for instance. For me, that is a little bit over the top, but hey, that's what some people have. Some people have extreme fear of water or extreme fear of heights or spiders. You know, people have specific extreme phobia or fears of various things. Some it could be needle, for some it could be blood, for some it could be vomit. So many different specific phobias. Again, what makes it a phobia is because you realize that your response to this sort of perceived threat is usually quite disproportionate. And then finally, just very briefly, what we have is also obsessive compulsive disorder, which is OCD. Many of us would know it by. And OCD usually comes with a set of obsessional thinking or some compulsions that we feel we have to do. So some of the obsessions that people may have, obsessional thinking, that may lead them to engage in these compulsions may include things like some people may have severe intrusions. So they may have intrusive thoughts about either stabbing somebody with a knife, or some may have intrusions about driving a car into a river, or some may have intrusions about harming a child in a very pervasive way. Some may have intrusions about sexually abusing a child. And all these things sometimes may lead to extreme distresses, where most of these intrusions, people then develop various compulsions by which they think will keep them safe and will keep others safe. So like I said before, when this becomes such a fear that an individual has, avoidance may be something they will tend to do. So for instance, somebody who may have intrusive thoughts about harming a child, they may choose not to go near children wherever possible. So sometimes you may come across somebody in church who may have such an extreme distress about even the thought of wanting to be or being asked to help with the children's ministry or children's department. I'm not necessarily saying that person may have OCD, But I'm just saying sometimes some of the responses we come across with people in church, there could be some underlying issues that usually we may not be aware of. And I think it's so important that sometimes we bear some of these things in mind. Just very briefly, then I would leave it open if anyone has any questions that they might want to ask. So briefly looking at symptoms of anxiety disorders. So for some, you may find there will be palpitations. Some would have chest pains or discomfort or shortness of breath, or in some cases, hyperventilation. Others would experience dry mouth, difficulty swallowing, nausea or abdominal distress. In some severe cases, some people have diarrhea, frequent or urgent malnutrition. Some people with extreme anxiety may have sexual dysfunction. Some people sweat a lot. Some will have to deal with flushing or pallor. Others will experience dizziness, unsteady or fainting, or similar to passing out. For others, they may experience muscle tension. Some would have tremors. And sometimes for some people, some of these tremors can be quite severe as well. For others, they would have constant fatigue, muscle aches, headaches. Others would experience fearful anticipation, a sense of impending danger, which is usually very common with almost all forms of anxiety. Some people, they simply can't rest. They become very restless. They become irritable. Others would constantly be having the worrying thoughts that I talked about. And typically with worry, the key questions people tend to have is the what if, the what ifs. So what if this goes wrong, and what if that goes wrong, and what if this happens, and what if that happens? And then for other lot. So you simply will be sitting in church and pastor is preaching this powerful sermon, but your mind is racing a million miles an hour. You simply can't be in the moment, be in the present, to really be where you're supposed to be and concentrate on what is happening. For others, hypervigilance is massive. And this is where there is an overestimation in the alertness or the perceived threat. For others, sleep can be a real problem for them as well. So you will find that anxiety, out of the various psychological disorders, anxiety disorders usually tend to carry symptoms, most of which we tend to sometimes misconstrue to be something else as a medical condition. So if you have experienced anxiety, if you are experiencing anxiety, you may find that perhaps some of these symptoms may ring a bell. There may be something you may be able to identify with. And if you are, then my take is it may be time that you may want to start doing something about it. In closing, the Bible gives us some thoughts, something we can think about. In Philippians 4, 6, and 7, the Bible says, "Do not be anxious about anything." Another version, renders it, "Do not worry about anything." And then in Matthew 6, 25-34, context, just talks about worry. And his admonition is that do not worry about anything. But then he goes on to say, do not worry about tomorrow. And the reason why we're not supposed to worry about tomorrow, something that psychologists are really catching up on. And in fact, when we treat people with generalized anxiety disorder, where worry seems to be a key feature, one of the things, in fact, the principle that we use in psychology in treating this is exactly the same principle that Jesus has mentioned many, many, many years ago. And that is, when we worry about tomorrow, what it does is that it takes your mind away from the present, and we lose the enjoyment or the joy that we can experience in the here and now, because our mind is already moving on to the what ifs of tomorrow. And mark what Jesus said as well, that which one of you, by worrying about tomorrow, can add another single minute or second or day to your age? We can't. And what we know is that it doesn't matter how much worry or anxiety you may have about an impending danger, whether it's real or imaginary, in most cases, worry will simply not change a thing. All it does is that it robs you away from the joy of today. And so when Jesus said, each day has sufficient troubles of its own, and therefore do not worry about tomorrow, there is absolute wisdom in that. And in many ways, when it comes to worry, especially, if we could only apply what Jesus said, we realize that a lot of our tomorrow's worries may simply not be there. And of course, with some of the other anxiety disorders, you know, God has blessed professionals who can help you to be able to work through them. So whether it's social anxiety, whether it's acrophobia, whether it's panic disorder, PTSD, health anxiety, specific phobia, OCD, whatever they might be, there are people who can help to overcome these disorders. So when Jesus said, I have come so you may have life and have it more abundantly, you and I can begin to experience the abundant life that God desires for you and I.